Hello, welcome to a Tuesday edition of Bill Allen's Facebook Bible Studies. We're going through the Daily Bible in chronological order, compiled by F. Ligard Smith, the best daily Bible reading tool I've ever found. And I always enjoy going through it when I do. And I hope that you're either reading along or at least gathering some encouragement from these lessons as we share them on Tuesdays and Thursdays. A word of encouragement, we're almost at the New Testament. Can you believe it? Yes, it comes in October, a little bit later in October. But we first finish out the Old Testament, and then we have a couple of lessons in the book on the time in between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And I think Dr. Smith's chapters there are so very, very helpful. If you have that book or if you want to read it online, whatever you want to do, it would be a great exercise to do because always a lot of questions about the silent 400 years, as we call them, but they were anything but silent as far as world events. And it was the time of God doing the final preparations for the birth of his son, the coming of the Messiah and Savior. But let's get there. And to get there, we have to go through Daniel. And the book of Daniel has lots of great stories, lots of confusing stories. But two great stories are very well known, one of them especially, Daniel in the lion's den. But the first one we're going to look at is in Daniel chapter 5. Have you ever told someone, hey, I can see the writing on the wall, how this is going to turn out? Did you know that that saying came from the book of Daniel? It sure did. In Daniel chapter 5, it's around 45 or so years after the destruction of Jerusalem. The exiles have been in Babylon for quite some time. And Daniel is there as an exile, as we have seen already, as we saw him and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his friends, taken into captivity in that first deportation of the best of the best. And so Daniel and his three friends have really shown themselves to be worthwhile subjects to the king of Babylon. And now there's a new king. Nebuchadnezzar has died. And so now there's a different king, a descendant of Nebuchadnezzar by the name of Belshazzar. And this Belshazzar is, he's going to be somebody that doesn't know how to do things very well. So let's start reading in Daniel 5, beginning at verse 1. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. When Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father or ancestor, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. Now, you probably are already thinking, this is not a good idea. And you're right. Verse 3 of Daniel 5. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Instead of humbly giving thanks for his position and his victories and his arrogance, he takes the sacred things that were taken from the temple in Jerusalem and from the palace, and began to praise his gods using them. And then verse 5, Daniel 5, verse 5. Suddenly the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his legs became weak and his knees were knocking. And I'm sure that's right. It sounds like something out of a Stephen King movie. It is unbelievable, and yet it is a true Bible story. God deals with this arrogant king, and he starts that off with this hand, this mysterious hand that is writing on the wall. But the interesting thing from here is his wise men and his astrologers and sorcerers and all of them in Babylon, they didn't understand what the message was. And so he starts asking around, and finally they remember that there's a guy with among the exiles who is pretty good at interpreting dreams. He did it for Nebuchadnezzar, and let's see if he can do this as well. And so sure enough, Daniel is brought before the king, And Daniel begins by saying, you know, he's going to offer him all these gifts. And Daniel says, no, I don't want your money. I don't want your gifts. I don't need any of that. But he says, you know, God did you a favor. God put you in a very high place of authority. And you even saw some of the things that God did in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. And yet here you are not giving God the glory, and in your arrogance, taking it on yourselves. However, he says, I'm going to tell you what this message from God is. Verse 25 of Daniel 5. Here, this is the inscription that was written. Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parzen. Sure, I'm not pronouncing that right, but who knows how it's pronounced. Verse 26. Here is what these words mean. Mene, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. And of course, all those words relate to those things that Daniel says they are symbolic of and mean. And so basically the message is, you've been measured and found wanting. You've probably heard that statement before as well. You don't measure up. You don't measure up. And so because of that, you're going to die, and your kingdom is going to be taken away from you, so much so that it'll be taken from all of your people, from all of the Babylonians, and the Medes and the Persians will divvy it up. And remember in Daniel 2, that's exactly what the vision and the dream of Nebuchadnezzar had indicated, and Daniel had interpreted that it would be the Babylonians, and then after them, the Medes and the Persians, and then after them, another great kingdom, the Greek Empire, and then after that, the Roman Empire. And in the days of those kings, Daniel 2 said, verse 44, God will set up a kingdom, speaking of his church, that will never be destroyed. Well, the king responds in a very positive way, and he honors Daniel, but that very night, verse 30 says, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. When you see the handwriting on the wall, it may just be too late. So you might want to take a look at this book before then. And along that lines, you can probably scroll down on my Facebook page or the Facebook pages from West Irwin Church of Christ and West Irwin Live, or even on our website, and see a short little video, less than 5 minutes, that promotes our World Bible School ministry that is going to be helping people study the Bible and get a little bit of help along the way. And if you're in Tyler, you're going to see some ads running around. You might see us a short spot on the news in the morning. If you have a student at Tyler Independent School District, then that peach jar means of communicating to the families, we're on that. And that's going to happen over the next couple of months or so. And so if you would like to study the Bible, but would like to have a little bit of help and would like to do it in a very non-threatening way, that's your ticket. Don't wait until you see the writing on the wall and you realize, wow, I should have read the Bible and done what it said. Well, we can help there. We can help there. Well, we're not through with Daniel. We're going to spend one more story on him. He's got a few more visions after this until the book ends. But this will be our last little foray into Daniel's life, and it's the most famous, one of the most famous stories in the Bible. In fact, Joyce remembers this Bible story from the time she was just a child, and she was with her nanny and Papa at their house, and he would get out the old family Bible, and she would say, Papa, read me the story of the lion's den. And he would open up that big Bible, and of course, those big family Bibles, they were illustrated. They had great pictures. And she would see those pictures of those hungry lions and Daniel in the lion's den. And Papa would tell her about how God delivered Daniel and how God can deliver us as well. And that is the story. And that's why it's there. But it's just so great. Let's read it. Daniel 6. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. Remember, he was a pretty popular guy after he identified the dream and interpreted it for King Nebuchadnezzar. Now Daniel so distinguished himself that the king had planned to put him in charge of everything, verse 5 says. And so all the other guys, of course, were jealous, and they didn't want that to happen. And so they couldn't figure out a way to trap him because, unlike some of today's leaders, there was no corruption that could be found in him. He just never was negligent or incompetent, and he never was corrupt. That's Daniel 6, verse 5. Oh, for leaders like that in our countries today. Verse 5. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." Boy, what a powerful, powerful statement. It gets overlooked because we're not in the lion's den yet, but these men and their treachery, they realize if we want to trap him on something, there's only one way we can get him, and that is to challenge him to disobey the law of his God, because they knew that's a bridge he wouldn't cross. He wouldn't do it. So they came up with this great plan, and they said, "Anyone who prays to any god or human during the next 30 days, except to the king, will be thrown into the lion's den." Now, the king liked the sound of that. He didn't think it through, and so he signed off on it. And so here's how Daniel responds, verse 10 of Daniel 6. "Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. 3 times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before." What does Daniel do? He does the one thing that was forbidden according to this unjust law. He prayed to his father. He prayed to the God of heaven, the God of the Jews, the God who is the one true and living Creator God. Well, that's what the other leaders knew would happen because they knew he wouldn't stop praying. And so they go before the king and they say, "King, didn't you make this decree? And isn't a decree like this with your signet ring on it, isn't that binding?" And the king says, "Yeah, the decree stands," the end of verse 12, "cannot be repealed." So then, verse 13, they said to the king, "Well, there's a guy in your kingdom. In fact, he's one of your leaders, the Jew Daniel, who, after this edict was written, this decree was written and sealed, and the 30 days had begun, he was could be found upstairs in his room praying 3 times a day towards Jerusalem, praying to his God. Now, king, that violates your decree, doesn't it?" So they're trying to trap him. You see, the king knew that Daniel was a good man. He had put him in a place of authority, just like his ancestor Nebuchadnezzar had done. And so he says, oh man, the king is really distraught. They go to the king, and he gives the order to have Daniel thrown into the den of lions in verse 16. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." The king had a good heart, but he was a weak man. And instead of standing against these men and saying, "Look, this was not the way we do things here in the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, and I'm going to rescind that because it's the right thing to do," instead, he caved and he said, "But at least," he said, "Daniel, I pray that the God you pray to all the time will deliver you even from the den of lions." So, verse 17, a stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego couldn't come and steal him away. Then the king, verse 18, returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. The king was really, truly distraught over what was going on to Daniel, and he knew that this was unjust. He knew, just like Pilate knew, that the trial of Jesus was a sham trial and that he was not guilty and certainly not deserving of death, but neither was Daniel. And yet the king made the decree, and Daniel was thrown in there. At the first light of dawn, verse 19 of Daniel 6, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you even from the lions?" Verse 21, Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty. Instead of bringing the praise on himself, Daniel praises his God. And he says, God delivered me, he sent his angel, and he delivered me. And I have never done anything to deserve this. I have never done anything against you, O king. Verse 23, the king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. Just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, remember when they were thrown into the fiery, fiery furnace? They didn't even smell like smoke. There was no burn on them. And then when the king threw the people who had accused them into that fiery furnace, they were burned before they ever completely got in there. Well, you might say, what about these lions? Maybe they weren't hungry. Maybe they'd just been fed. Maybe this was so unexpected. Well, not quite. Verse 24 of Daniel 6. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Pretty hard for our weak stomachs and soft hearts to fathom, but what's the lesson here? The lesson is this is how God deals with sin, and it's not pretty. And these men were sinners, and they were unjustified in what they did. They acted out of selfishness and pride and ego and a power-hungry trip. And they falsely accused Daniel, and they coerced the king into putting him in the lion's den. But God saved him. He sent his angel, and he saved him. However, that wasn't the case with these men. When they were thrown into the lion's den, before they even hit the ground, the lions had destroyed them and eaten them up. Verse 25, then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, may you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And as we said, we're going to read one more caveat into Daniel's life when this strange prophecy towards the end of the book of Daniel. But for now, two great reminders of the power of our God. The writing on the wall, do you see it? It's actually found in this book now. You ought to read it and heed it, because that's the word of God. And it's just as true as it was in Daniel's day. And the awesome power and love and deliverance of our God. Just as he delivered Daniel from the lion's den, we serve the same God. We have our lions as well. But we also have the same God, the God of Daniel. And so I hope, my friend, that whatever you're going through right now, whatever you're going through today, that you will give to the God of Daniel, that you will give to the God of creation, that you will give to our Savior, to our Father, and he will overcome. God bless you, and I will see you on Thursday.